renewed fighting between the DRC army and the M23 movement. And Rwanda is accused of backing the rebels. What's behind this round of conflict? And could it escalate into a full-blown war between the two neighbors? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohamed Jimjoum. More than 25 years after the first Congo War, the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda are once again engaged in dispute. The Central African neighbors have accused each other of firing rockets across their shared border, including a strike that killed two Congolese children. This seems to have been triggered by fighting between the M23 rebel group and state forces in the east. Both Congo and the United Nations have accused Rwanda of supporting the M23 movement. The UN has urged all parties to immediately cease all forms of violence.
The region doesn't need a new crisis. Let's keep the channels of dialogue open at all levels, including at the community level, and help preserve the progress achieved in the recent years thanks to the various cooperation mechanisms.
The March 23rd Movement, or M23, is also known as the Congolese Revolutionary Army. It's a rebel military group based in eastern areas of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, mainly in the province of North Kivu. Its leadership is made up of members of the Tutsi ethnic group. They say their aim is to fight enemy groups founded by Hutus who fled Rwanda after the 1994 genocide. The rebels merged with the Congolese army under a peace deal signed on March 23, 2009. But in 2012, they said the deal had not been upheld and broke away, naming their group the March 23rd Movement. All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests in Accra. Kambale Musavuli is a researcher at the Center for Research on the Congo-Kinshasa. In Kigali, Gatete Niringabo Ruhumuliza is a political commentator. In Tilburg, the Netherlands, Felix Nidahinda is a researcher focusing on conflict, peace, and justice in the Great Lakes region. A warm welcome to you all, and thank you so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Kambale, let me start with you today. What's behind this new round of violence?
It's hard to tell what's behind that. For almost 6 months now, there have been an uprising of the M23 in the east, but they're not the only militia group active in the east. So it's very hard to know. We do know that there have been peace negotiations taking place in Nairobi with the many militia groups in the DRC to come up with some resolution for peace and stability. For the east, something organized by the president of Kenya. And during this period, for some strange reasons, the M23 has started their campaign to attack UN peacekeepers and also the Congolese forces in specific areas. And that has continued, and we've noticed that the military power has increased tremendously by having power to attack at night, by having weapons they didn't have before, which has caused the Congolese government to state there is tacit support of Congo's neighbors, particularly Rwanda, to the M23. So as I can say, no one really knows why the attacks has taken place at this present time, but it is a destabilizing force at the moment.
Kambale, if I could just follow up with you. You mentioned that there are talks or negotiations going on between different groups right now. First of all, how many groups are we talking about? And secondly, any indications on how those talks are going?
I mean, in terms of the militia groups, some numbers take it up to 100 militia group there. But you have to understand even what that actually means. Now, a group may have 20 rebels in its force occupying a territory, and they'll call themselves a rebel group. But the way to look at the groups in the eastern part of Congo is that you have groups that are supported by Congo's neighbors, particularly Rwanda and Uganda. And you do have local rebels who are either protecting the territory or interacting into illicit trade of minerals. But the essence of that is that since 1996, Congo has not known peace and stability, mainly because of interference of its neighbors, Rwanda and Uganda, who continued explicitly to support rebel groups in the east, causing the destabilization of the Congo. Yes, I can say it's about 100. of them, but it doesn't mean much. But why are they negotiating? Congo has just joined the East Africa community. There seemed to be a political will on the part of Kenya to see how Congo can be stabilized, maybe to bring about the potential of the Congo for the East African community. And as I said, in Nairobi, they've been really, really pushing hard to have peace and stability. And the negotiation has been for rebel groups to put down their arms, either be integrated in the society or in the military. And he hasn't concluded, and it's still ongoing at the moment.
Getete, I want to ask you about how you see things from your vantage point there in Kigali. Why are tensions escalating now?
So from Kigali, people are surprised and confused by two things, two developments. The first development was as soon as M23 re-emerged to attack the DRC. M23, the military wing has been in Rwanda for just under 10 years. The political wing has been in Rwanda just under 10 years, but the military wing has been in Uganda for 5 years. And 5 years later, they crossed and camped into the DRC forests without being attacked and without attacking anyone. So everybody was aware of the existence of M23 in Congolese forests for at least the last 5 years. Now, when they started attacks recently, Rwanda was surprised that the DRC, the first thing the DRC did was to point fingers at Rwanda and say if they attack today, that means they must be supported by Rwanda. I think that one of the problems and the reason this M23 exists is that Congolese often do not make a difference between people who speak in Rwanda, in DRC, and Rwandan citizens. So, and this M23, one of the things that they're demanding, I understand, is the fact that they're discriminated in their country and they're considered to be Rwandans, even though they are fully Congolese. So every time they attack, and because they attack speaking Kinyarwanda, they look like Rwandans, people conclude that Rwanda is behind them. And so that in itself, the accusations were followed by measures. We had the airline Rwanda Air that was flying into the DRC, whose license was suspended. The ambassador was summoned to receive letters of protest and so on. That was fine in itself. It wasn't great, but it was okay. We could deal with that because friendship is something you foster. When it works, when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But the problem is that following these fightings, now the DRC has been shelling Rwandan territory and territories of Kinigi, which is close to the border with DRC, and Gisenyi. Now, if you look at the morphology of the Rwandan country, which is a very small country, densely populated, a bomb that falls on the Rwandan territory has much more devastating effects than fightings that have been going in Congo for 20 years, which have no effect in Kinshasa or just 200 kilometers from where the war is happening. So Rwanda is not like Congo. Rwanda is extremely vulnerable to any of the accidental or otherwise deliberate shelling on its population. Kinigi is a place where we have invested a lot in tourism. That's home.
Getete, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me get back to that point you're making in just a couple of minutes. Felix, I want to ask you about your opinion on if all this tension that is escalating right now could actually spill over into a full-blown war between the neighbors. And how big a fear is there right now of escalation? And what would that mean for the region?
At least my reading of the situation is that there are serious fears that this can escalate into a regional war. Given the nature of, for example, the accusations that are going from different sides, and given the dynamics, the narratives, and especially also the kind of the flames that are igniting the media, particularly social media, and of course politicians reacting also towards all of that. I think the threat is realistic. I mean, we know now with the fighting in Bunagana, with the border post occupied by the M23, anything can happen from there. And with, of course, my understanding now from what I can read on social media, subject to verifications, a lot of Congolese soldiers having crossed, again, with all needed caveats, into Uganda. A lot can happen, and one would really hope that all actors of goodwill from the regional powers like Kenya and so on, and international interveners probably need to do something to avoid that escalation. Rather than that, it looks like we are quite in a dangerous territory.
Gatete, the African Union has launched efforts to try and mediate this crisis between Kinshasa and Kigali. Has any progress been made?
Well, no, not really. Unfortunately, no progress has been made because the negotiations have to be based on facts and evidence. And we have what we call an extended joint verification mechanism that is based in DRC, whose reports the DRC did not believe. I mean, for example, the DRC is adamant that Rwanda is supporting M23 in spite of any independently verifiable facts. They used, you know, they extrapolate. They say if they are efficient on, if M23 is efficient on a battlefield, that means they're supported by Rwanda. But the joint verification mechanism has not established that. So negotiations cannot go on because the DRC, for instance, would say that M23 comes from Rwanda. Uganda would confirm that M23 actually comes from Uganda, but the DRC would persist that it comes from Rwanda, even though there's no evidence to that. There's the internal political dynamics of the DRC that makes it easy to point fingers at Rwanda, which have nothing to do with Rwanda. It's Congolese internal affairs, which then makes it difficult for the Congolese government to do honest and open negotiations because they have to please their own internal political pressures.
So, Gatete, I mean, if you're saying that there is a mechanism, but it sounds to me like you're also saying that that mechanism really can't function in an appropriate way right now. I mean, first of all, let me ask you, what are Rwanda's immediate concerns? And how then can things actually start being de-escalated?
So the mechanism actually functions very well under the patronage of the International Commission for the Great Lakes Region. We have mechanisms that include more than 10 countries. They function. They do provide reports on a frequent basis. In fact, what they are saying right now is that, yes, the DRC is shelling bombs on the Rwandan territory. None of these international independent mechanisms are saying that Rwanda is supporting DRC, which is why there's no country in the world that is condemning Rwanda for supporting M23 because there's no evidence of such allegations. Only DRC is making the allegation. Now, how can the situation be de-escalated? One, it can be de-escalated if the DRC is capable of dealing with internal problems by negotiating with its own several groups that, in my opinion, they have not been able to defeat militarily. But that's an internal DRC issue. Number two, we are worried about two things as Rwandan citizens. One, they bomb Rwandan territory. When you bomb Kinigi, you are bombing the home to mountain gorillas. This is critical to us because tourism represents 30% of our national income. When you bomb Gisenyi, you are bombing a very densely populated region with a strong population. This is very dangerous for us. We cannot. That's number two. Number three, and the last point that worries us very much, is now the government, the army of the DRC, having lost repeatedly on the battlefield against M23, have recruited FDLR, which is the force of liberation of Rwanda, former people who committed the genocide who live in the DRC. Now they are collaborating with the National Army of the DRC, and the Congolese president admitted it. Now the two are being supported by the MONUSCO, which is a UN force. Now imagine a UN force that is collaborating with genocide perpetrators on a daily basis. FDLR is becoming mainstream. And this is something that worries the Rwandan side. So negotiations have not advanced.
Kambale, you heard Gatete there bring up the role that the UN is playing, and I want to ask you about that. I mean, the UN is now urging all parties involved in the growing tensions between Kinshasa and Kigali to immediately cease all forms of violence in these border regions between Rwanda and DRC. From your perspective, are there immediate steps that can be taken to ease the tensions, and is the UN in any way effective in all this?
First, we have to make a correction. there have been countries and multilateral institutions that have actually put pressure on Rwanda to stop supporting rebels and interfering. Even the last statement coming from the Secretary General, his spokesperson, clearly stated, indirectly stated, that outside forces, neighboring countries should stop supporting the M23. It may not be explicitly saying Rwanda, but we know what he refers to when he says outside. So many nations have done so. Specific for the United Nations, the United Nations peacekeeping forces, they depend on the UN Security Council, particularly the political will of the council to end the crisis in the Congo. And for the past 25 years, we have seen numerous times that the political will has lacked. One will ask why. You know, I always put it very clearly. There are two nations in the Security Council who are playing cover for Rwanda, specifically the United States and the United Kingdom. I mean, some of you may know that Rwanda is about to receive over $150 million for receiving refugees from the UK. So the UK has everything to do with making sure that its ally on the African continent does not is not held into account. Same for the United States. But concretely, what will bring about peace in Congo? I think we must be very genuine, even honest, when we are having this discussion about the DRC, because we're speaking about it as the M23 is a rebel force that just appeared. Well, it's been going on for 25 years. When you're talking about the M23, it's connected to the CNDP. When you're talking about the CNDP, it's connected to the RCD. While you are talking to the RCD, it's connected to the AFDL. So I've just threw some acronyms there. What are these names? Those are the same rebel group that exists in the Congo since 1996. How do I know that? The leader of the so-called M23, Sultani Makenga, who has an arrest warrant from the Congolese government, who is not bothered. He travels in Uganda all the time. There are also M23 rebels with arrest warrants who are living in Rwanda, and they have not been extradited to the DRC. They are all have been implicated in the wars in the Congo that has taken the lives of millions. And even lately, the person who spoke before me, mentioned there was a shelling of Giseni and Kinigi, you know, where Bosco Ntaganda was at the ICC. He failed to say that just yesterday, there was a bombing of a school in the DRC by the Rwandan military that shelled a bomb, a school where a six-year-old and a seven-year-old has died. So for peace and stability to come into the region, we must be honest. Why do we have conflict? It's very simple. It's the destabilization of the DRC to get control of Congo's wealth using proxy rebel militias. In this case, we are discussing the M23.
Felix, you heard Kambale there talk about destabilization. So I want to ask you, I mean, is the international community doing enough to try to put pressure when it comes to this situation? And are we going to see the international community step in to help de-escalate things?
I mean, I can always hope and probably think that there will be some kind of background channels and a lot of talks and a lot of, let's say, diplomatic kind of activity around trying to find a solution, at least at the interstate level. And even at the regional level, I mean, Kenya has been very much present in the dossier. I would expect countries like Tanzania and so on to be very much involved in trying to find a solution. That being said, I guess we'll never have that final, let's say, lasting solution unless we really try to look at the depth of what are the issues are. My friend here, Kambale, already just talked about the acronyms and background to the different movements. But we need to look at the phenomenon of M23 as part of the bigger kind of problem with Eastern DRC and security and peace in Eastern DRC and the incidents on the wider region. And we have to look at the history and the ton of unresolved issues. And these need to be broken down at the different levels as well. There are issues which are at the very local level in North Kivu specifically and in South Kivu specifically. For example, now we are talking only about M23, but last year we had close enough to the same level of heat and debate about the whole plateau of South Kivu with with fighting still very much ongoing there.
Mm-hmm.
So in South Kiev as well, we have quite a lot of local unresolved issues. And these tend to have quite a big resonance at the national level, again, strictly speaking, within the Congolese landscape. And here we are talking about issues of identity, ethnicity, citizenship, control of land, and issues of power, including representation within power, including at the local level, traditional authorities, and so on, part of the legacy of the Belgian colonial systems inherited already in the Congo, which successive post-colonial administrations have never really lived up to reckoning with, or at least organized as should be in order to reflect modernity. Second, we need to look at, at the regional level. So local, national, but also regional level, indeed. There are many of those problems, for example, when you're talking about the identity issues. When you read most of the narratives you have now around M23 on social media lists, if you're only to stick to that space, M23 doesn't exist. It's nothing but a cover for Rwanda. In fact, there is no such a thing as a Rwandophone. Everything about M23 is Rwanda. And I think that is a very dangerous recourse to take. There are issues maybe that need to be investigated around where M23, how does it thrive? Is it supported or not? I think that's the work for all of those verification mechanisms. I'm sure that in the coming months and years, we'll get UN reports on that. We have a strong
Felix,
presence there.
If I could, I'm sorry to interrupt, but if I could follow up with you about a point that you're making there. I mean, you have a situation here where both DRC and Rwanda are accusing each other of supporting armed groups and even of launching cross-border attacks. You know, we come back to this to this question of, are there actual mechanisms that exist that are able to investigate these claims, and how are the facts established?
We have, I mean, for many years now, we have had a UN group of experts on the DRC that is meant always to investigate what happens in that part of the country every time. It has produced tons of reports and so on what goes on. But, I mean, documenting is one thing. Coming with actions that are meant to resolve problems that are identified is another thing. And most of the time, action lacks when it comes to resolving in a lasting way some of the issues that are identified. At the different levels I was talking about, I keep insisting there are local issues, there are domestic issues in the DRC, there are regional issues, and international. I didn't come to talk about so international when you talk about, for example, minerals and so on. I'm sure that there are regional interests in commercial interests between the DRC and the neighbors, but also there are international, probably even more impactful international links. So all of those need to be tackled. And if you tackle one of those and you don't address the others, you can only postpone the problem, but it will always be there, I'll admit.
All right, well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Kambale Musavuli, Gatete Nringabo Ruhumuliza, and Felix Indahinda. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.